I think you should have, along with it, a very well-written and well-described office policy manual that clearly establishes the expected parameters of staff behavior. And you've got to be consistent in the enforcement of the manual, because you can't show favoritism, because that's the surest way to breed staff discontent. So I think that when people know what's expected of them, they can respond to that. So many times, staff says, well, gee, she thinks or he thinks that, that I'm a mind reader, you know, that no matter what I do isn't good enough. So if we have clearly defined parameters of behavior, I think that that, and again, what happens is a lot of offices, they used to be a mom-and-pop operation. They used to be smaller. Now they've gotten bigger. The economy is phenomenal. Practices are growing. Million-dollar practices they're not the rule, but they're certainly not the exception anymore. So as staff sizes increase, as practice sizes increase, we can't continue to manage our office the same way that we did when we were a much smaller operation. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, and it's kind of unfortunate, because I've always hated office policy manuals. But, you're right. I mean, if you've got an operation there with several doctors and several hygienists and different people manning different positions at all times of the day, you need to have some written rules. There's no question about it.
I think that you also need to have an established routine of annual job performance reviews, because staff definitely expect this, and I think they should. I mean, they need feedback. They need to know how they're doing. And I find that one of the big reasons for staff discontent, is that the dentist promises something and then never follows through. And then after a while, the staff comes to not believe anything that the dentist promises or says because of his or her previous behavior. So I think you really got to do this annual review. And the tip that I would like to offer is that in preparation for that review, you should make a habit of going out to lunch one-on-one with each staff member 3 or 4 times a year. It's a wonderful opportunity for you to listen to their concerns and feelings about the office, and it's also a good opportunity for you to express your concerns as well. You can let them know all the wonderful things that they're doing, and then maybe just say, but there is something that I would love to be able to see you do to elevate your job to a different performance level, and then and you let them know that. And then you get back from lunch, and you take a couple of minutes and make some notes about these lunch meetings. Because this documentation is really going to make the annual review process that much easier and certainly more objective.
What do you do in your annual review?
Well, I think that what you always want to be able to do is, if we have performance standards, we can let them know that they are keeping up with those performance standards. It's always so much nicer to be able to compliment. These are the great things you do. We couldn't do this without you. But there's this particular thing. And then, in line with this, I think it's a very good idea to have the job review. You got to get it started so that you do it maybe 60 days before the annual raise, if that's going to happen, it was going to be due. Because you tell them about the expected behavior that you'd like to see happen. And you let them know, because you've already made this decision, what their raise is going to be. And I believe that when you tell them that, and this is what I'm looking for immediately you're going to get a change in that behavior 60 days before they get their salary increase anyway.
Mm.
And I think that it's something to keep in mind. I think that as a minimum reward for satisfactory job performance in your office, that I think that you should give an annual cost of living salary increase. But I certainly would give more than that for outstanding performance. So I don't think that the percentage raises that everybody's going to get 4%. I don't think so. Maybe give somebody 7 or 8 or 10. Because I think that we should be able to reward staff who outperform others.
And, the annual salary increase, at first that was kind of a turnoff when I heard about that, but I have to admit, I have been kind of lax in realizing when people were up for salary increases, and and I forget about it, and then a staff member has to come to you to ask for a raise, a staff member that's doing a good job, and it's very uncomfortable.
It really is, and they don't want to do it, but that they're saying, it's time, and I am doing a good job, and so if, in fact, somebody already has to come to ask you for this, you've lost a lot of the effectiveness of doing it. So much better for you to say, hey, by the way, I know that our salary review, you're not up for 2 months, but let's get together and talk about it anyway. And it sort of almost takes them by surprise and surprise them.
Absolutely. It's a must.
And do I have enough time to talk about a bonus incentive program?
A bonus? Well, boy, that can be like a three-hour discussion. Can you kind of do a summary? And
maybe what we should say is this, that, in fact, if anybody really wants to hear about this in more detail, obviously they'll be able to get in touch with me. But I would just like to go on record that in terms of attracting and maintaining and keeping a staff, I strongly believe in bonus incentive systems, which are going to satisfy what is called the greatest management principle in the world. And that says that if you want to receive more of a particular behavior, you want to reward that behavior. I would say that the bonus incentive system should be based mainly on collections rather than production, and so that, because we can't pay our bills with receivables. So I would believe that it would probably be too difficult to go into it on the tape, but I think that people really need to be able to incentivize their staffs. We can't ask our staffs to work harder. I mean, they're already working hard. I think that we can get them to work smarter. We can get them all on the same page. I don't believe that we should incentivize people for selling anything. You know, you do this crown, you're going to get 20. You sell a crown, you get $20. You sell this. I don't think that we want to do that. I think that we want to be able to show them, if the office as a whole does better, and we are going to do better because of your involvement, staff, then we're all going to share in the excess profits.
Okay, and you do have a definitive formula for people that want to contact you to get
that?
Yes,
absolutely, and we can talk about that later.
Great.
I think that we also need to create an absolutely desirable environment in your workplace, and I'm not just talking about the physical surroundings. I mean, the little extras that we do for our staff, like, you know, give them a day off with pay on their birthday, maybe a certificate for a massage. For each staff person every 6 months, not by the dentist, Rich.
Oh, you're no fun.
I know you were thinking about that.
I had a great mental picture going there.
Okay. I'm really in favor of writing personal notes to family members of staff. You know, for example, you've got a project that's going on in the office that's taking some extra time. So you write this little note to the 10-year-old daughter of one of your staff people. It says, you know, dear Susie, I just got to tell you how wonderful your mom is. We just absolutely couldn't work without her. She's so terrific, and I know we've been monopolizing her time a little bit about with this chart review process, but it's going to be over pretty soon, and I just want to thank you so much for being so patient with allowing your mom to work. Sincerely, you know, Dr. Maddow.
That's a cool idea.
And of course, you don't say anything to your staff person, and then they come in the next day and they say, I can't believe you wrote that letter. I mean, it's very, very exciting for them.
And that letter's going to be on the refrigerator for the next 6 months, too.
You better believe it. It absolutely is.
I love handwritten personal notes for everything.
Oh, yeah. It is just so much better. I mean, especially when, you know, you thank for referrals. I mean, so many of these dentists bought, you know, a box of referral cards. There's 2,500 of them they get when they graduate from dental school. They're still yellow from age, and they're still sending them in. And, well, you know, one point that I think is really, really important to keeping your staff happy is to realize the two things that they want more than sex and money, you know? And those two things are praise, which means recognition by you, the boss, and the second thing that they want is responsibility. They want to know that their ideas are listened to in the decision-making process and in the decision-making management process of the office. I don't know if you saw the survey. I saw it maybe 2-3 months ago that was published by Steve Anderson and Walter Haley from Dental Bootcamp, where they actually asked 200 dental staffs three questions. I mean, it was a little bit more involved with that, but this was sort of the thing that I picked up from that. The three questions they asked every staff person was, one, what makes you happiest in the office? Two, what would make you so happy that you'd want to work here forever? And three, if you could tell the dentist anything, what would it be to keep you as a member of the team forever? So here's what their answers were. What would make you happiest? Number one, an expression of appreciation by the doctor and by my patients. And two, being included in the decision-making things of the office. What would make you so happy that you'd want to work here forever? Answer, appreciation by the doctor, appreciation by patients, and respect for my opinion. And third, if you could tell the dumb dentist anything, what it would be to keep you as a member of the team, what would it be? And they answered, to empower team members by giving them responsibility, and then get out of the way and let them do it. Include the team in decision-making in the process. So you see, it's interesting that the answers were not a raise or a check or a bonus or even some free vacation to Hawaii. I mean, there's no question financial security is still important. But what could be easier for us to incorporate into our practices than an attitude of, and adopting an attitude of appreciation?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. And I think so many people think, well, you know, of course, you know, the staff knows they're appreciated. You know, I give them a job. I do it. But it's an ongoing process, a daily or actually by the minute process to let your staff know how much you appreciate them. It's
right.
A constant
and, you know,
thing.
That's where we get to that assumption thing, you know. I mean, we can't assume anything. If we do, it's really going to come back to haunt us. These same things that Anderson and Walter Haley discovered were borne out by another article that I saw a number of years ago in the Harvard Business Review, where they talk about that the most powerful motivator of an employee in a work setting is an excellent working relationship and continued personalized recognition from their immediate supervisor, which is you. And the three things that lead to job satisfaction are a great working environment, an opportunity for advancement, and an opportunity, again, to influence decision-making in the office.
I think that's a tough one, influence decision-making, because I think a lot of us are, God, I wouldn't say dictators, but you know, we kind of like being the monarch and the person that makes all the rules. And even though when you first start, it may be a great idea and it may help you grow your practice, but after a while, you get to a certain stage and it definitely works against you. But it can be really hard to let go and to let your staff have a lot of responsibility
and make
a lot of decisions.
The staff hears things that we as dentists never hear. Patients tell things to staff. Staff pick up on issues in the office that I've come to realize a long time ago, Rich, that dentists don't think like most of the world. You know what I mean?
Oh, I definitely know what you mean.
I mean, we're this very anal retentive group, and if any of them out there are listening to this tape and they're wondering if anal retentive is hyphenated, they're definitely, you know, anal retentive. And the fact is that we need to realize that we can depend on our staff to give us really good information. And if we communicated better with our staff, we would do this. But the problem is that the normal way that you do that is by having staff meetings. And so many dentists report they've had bad experiences with traditional staff meetings. These meetings turn into finger-pointing, backbiting, gripe sessions. People get upset. They get insulted. They storm out crying.
Oh,
you
know. I've been there.
You've been there, right? Been there, done that. So what we do is we stop having staff meetings and resort to what's called mushroom management. And, you know, the two principles of that are, number one, that you keep your staff in the dark, and number two, you feed them manure. And I would like to recommend to all of your listeners that they go back and listen to the tape that you did with Ken Glickman from Bottom Line Personal on the topic of iPower.
Oh, you know, didn't you love that tape?
Oh, I'll tell you, that was one of the best tapes you ever did.
iPower is so great.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using it for my clients now ever since I heard about it, and it's really, really made a difference. So I do believe I'd like to give you real kudos for that tape, because it's just tremendously terrific to be able to incorporate that into a practice.
Well, thanks. For those of you who don't know what Mayer's talking about, I'll just give you a 30-second summary of iPower. Is a non-traditional staff meeting method that allows, it actually forces almost every staff member to get their opinions known, to get their ideas out, to have their suggestions put out in the open, and to either implement them or not implement them, but at least, you know, get some ideas flowing and cooking. And it's not a brainstorming idea kind of thing, but it's a real methodical way that everybody in the office has input, and then the ideas that work get implemented, and the ones that don't work, well, you know, hey, it was a great thought, and you know, let's come up with more. So it's a really cool method of having a non-staff meeting.
Absolutely. I would totally agree with that.
A lot of staffing stuff here you talked about. Anything else you want to? Let me ask you a staff question, because I think you've kind of covered it, from why we can't find good staff to ways to find staff to ways to keep staff happy. I mean, that's pretty much the whole ball of wax there.
Right.
How about queen bees? I see those so many times, and I've had a few in my office as well. What can you do about queen bees?
Well, I think that usually the queen bee is somebody that has a tremendous amount of control over you, the dentist. For some reason or other, we feel that they do their job so well, or that they're the only ones who know about that job, and nobody else could replace them. And, of course, they've done a lot of homework to be able to get themselves into that position. I think that it's destructive. People will go, other staff members will go out of their way not to interact with that person because, you know, my wife tells me all the time, that you know, the way that you think about somebody is the way that most people think about it. So if you're the dentist and you're thinking about this person as the queen bee and all the negative connotation that I think that you're assuming about that, most of the other staff people feel the same way. So I don't think that there's a position for a queen bee in the office. And if that person is like that, I think that you need to let them go. Of course, most of the time we're scared to death to ever let somebody like that go because we think of what the ramifications are going to be in terms of, well, our office is going to fall apart. You know what, Rich? It doesn't. It doesn't happen. And then all of a sudden the whole dynamics of the office change because the environment is so much nicer. The air is cleared. People can say what they want to say without being afraid of anybody.
So give them a wholehearted attempt to become a team player, but if that doesn't work out, just give them a job opportunity.
it is always less expensive to be able to modify a staff person's behavior to get to what you know you're hoping they'll get to than to let the person go and hire a new person. I mean, there's no question about it. It's easy to do that, but some people can't be changed, you know. They want to change you. And, you know, sometimes we do as dentists need to be able to change. But I think that if we can't change their behavior to what is going to be acceptable to us and to the other staff members, then we're going to be stuck at a certain level. We're going to be working around this person, and that's going to be detrimental.
Well, that is fantastic advice you've given from top to bottom on attracting and maintaining a great staff. So I think, you know, if we stopped here, the information in this tape would just be so worthwhile because everybody has a staff. Everybody needs to know this stuff. But we've got a few more minutes left. Now, one of the things that you said you've noticed in all the top offices is the ability to schedule profitably and efficiently.
Yes.
Now, there's just no way that in the next 10 minutes we have left we could really cover that. But I do want to say that you have agreed to let us insert an article that you've written on this topic. So when you get this tape, if you look in the inserts, there'll be a great article in there. This is an article that originally appeared in the January 2000 issue of Dental Town,
right,
which is Howard Ferrand's really good dental newsletter magazine. Howard's a great guy, as you all know, and nice to let us reprint that and insert it. So there'll be an insertion here on scheduling. It was a really neat article. So thanks for that. But we do have time to cover one more of the topics that you talked about, at least briefly, and that is the ability to let your patients know that you – well, did I say that right?
Yeah. I mean, the ability to let your patients know that you care – by delivering great customer service.
That's it.
I feel that in a way, this all ties in with staff situation because if you decide that you're going to try to deliver great customer service, you know, you just say, okay, fine, we're at one level, we want to go to another level. Just like we're at one level with our staff and now we're going to go to another level. Well, if you decide that you're going to be able to deliver great customer service, then you certainly need that great staff that we've just been talking about. I mean, average just doesn't cut it anymore. It just doesn't do it. You know, I'll tell you, a new client that I started with recently said to me, you know, Mayor, I don't know why we don't get more new patients. We do a pretty good job. And I told him that, you know, doing a pretty good job isn't good enough. You've got to do a fantastic job, an outstanding job. You've got to deliver customer service that forces people to notice. It's got to be customer service that really is unattainable anywhere else. It's got to be what I've heard called exquisite customer service. It's so outstanding that it forces people to talk about you and tell others at cocktail parties. It's got to be outrageous customer service. And if you can deliver that kind of stuff, you can create the competitive advantage that you're trying to do. You know, you got to understand what customer service is. We have to define it. And in my mind, customer service means that you're consistently equaling or exceeding your clients or your customer, your patient's expectations. Not just every once in a while, but every day, day in, day out. And, I mean, give you an example of not meeting it. I'm recently going to California, and I get on an airplane, and after a few minutes, they announce that once we get airborne and have your drinks, that we're going to be coming through the cockpit with your choice of dinner, and we're going to have fish and steak. And I'm sitting about a third of the way from the front, and by the time the stewards got to me, they were out of steak. So, you know, my expectations were I was going to be able to have whatever I wanted. But you see, it didn't exceed, and it didn't equal my expectations. So in my mind, that wasn't really, really good customer service. There have been a few people who've had a real influence on me, and one of them was also somebody that you had on your tape, who was Mort Newton, who's a doctor down in the Washington, D.C. area.
You kind of remind me of Mort.
Please?
You remind me of Mort a little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a compliment.
It really is. He is a great guy, and a dental practice genius, although he would never admit it, but he really is.
Well, I mean, that book, The Successful Practice in Good Times and Bad, really made an influence on my thinking with his motto, which really is basically says, you take care of your customers. Take good care of your customers, and they're going to take good care of you. Whatever it costs, you got to do it. Another big influence on me has been Harvey McKay. And, you know, of course, everybody knows about Harvey McKay. Maybe people don't know that he's the president of a company called McKay Envelope, which became a $500 million company. And when he started the company many years ago, he says that there were 50 other companies in the state that manufactured the same envelope and stationery. So he determined that he had to distinguish his company from the competition. And he was manufacturing a commodity, I mean, which is even more difficult to do. So he came up with this idea that you have to be able to deliver unbelievable great customer service. And Harvey says that successful organizations, whether they're dental practices or whatever, have one thing in common, and that's a bunch of satisfied customers. And if you don't have a customer who is recommending you, then you don't have a customer who is going to be there forever, because you've got a customer who could be vulnerable to your competition. So I think that when it comes to customer service, that you've got to do whatever it takes to get people talking about you, as long as the people are saying nice things about you. of course, I mean, there are all the basics, you know, like the emergency scene that day and a patient call list and staying on time. We've got to respect people's time. You know, all this stuff with making fresh cookies and soft drinks and coffee and warm blankets and aromatherapy. One that I really like is a PR budget that I recommend to my clients of at least $250 a month to reward patient referrals for lottery tickets and, you know, with movie tickets, flowers, anything to let them know that we feel that we're special.
You know, it's funny. It's probably actually 2 or 3 months ago, by the time people get this tape, we interviewed Tom Hedge, who's a really great guy and a successful practitioner in the Midwest. And one of his customer service things was to get an Otis Spunkmeyer cookie baking machine.
Right.
And you know, since that tape went out, we've gotten a flood of calls from people saying they did it and it was great.
It is. It's a wonderful thing. You know, what's nice about the tape series and about any of these kinds of things is about offering these ideas on non-clinical issues. It's that anybody can do them. I mean, you just have to have the desire and the need to do it. I'll tell you one quick thing that we always did that took patients by surprise. And we did it in the context of somebody who was coming in for, you know, a long 2 or 3 hour crown and bridge appointment. And in the pre-op discussions about the treatment, we would sort of find out in passing, you know, what was their favorite music. They like the Beatles, they like Frank Sinatra, whatever it is. And when they came in for their appointment, right on the tray, just as they were about to sit down, we had a new, still in its wrapper, CD on the chair. And of course it was, you know, Frank Sinatra tape. And they took a look at it. So it wasn't, you know, something that you got out with dust on it from your existing library. But it actually showed that you went and spent $12 or $14 to get them a new CD. And that really made a major impression on people. I mean, it was like, wow, they really care about me. Because you've done something that shows that you really went out of your way. You went the extra mile in order to be able to do it.
Now, that's for them to listen to during their appointment?
Please?
They listen to that,
yes,
during their appointment?
Exactly, because then you could have, you know, you have these little headsets and stuff, and they could listen to their own CD.
And then do you give that to them or keep it in the office CD collection?
No, we would give it to them.
Oh, okay. I like keeping it in the office CD collection.
I know you would.
It's a good way to build up your CD collection. No, but that is great to give it to. That's
it
fantastic.
You know, I think that when you think about customer service, that I always – tell people about a great quote from somebody whose name is Leon Gorman. And now you may not know him, maybe you do, but you certainly know his company. He's the president of L.L. Bean. And Leon Gorman was quoted in some article a number of years ago of saying that service is just a day in, day out, ongoing, never-ending, unremitting, persevering, compassionate type of activity. And, you know, that was sort of the motto and the standard that they were trying to do for L.L. Bean. You know, everybody knows 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. I mean, you can return anything. So if that kind of service is what they're trying to do at L.L. Bean, I think it's probably good enough for all of us.
All right, it's a pretty successful company.
That's for sure.
You know, I had a well, everybody has a customer service story. One of my favorites happened to us a few years ago. My wife and kids and I were skiing in Colorado. We were flying into Beaver Creek. Actually, we flew into Vail Airport, and Vail Airport was snowed out. We couldn't land. They had to divert the flight, and they put us up in Colorado City. And the airline did a real nice job of that, but that's not the main part, even though they treated us very well.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning, they flew us back into Vail and sent us on a bus to wherever we were going. We wound up in Beaver Creek Lodge, which was a great ski lodge. I think we were like 36 hours late. We just looked horrible. We were total. I mean, we looked like we were homeless people kind of trushing in there. And they looked up and they said, "Oh, you must be the Matto family," which is great. I'm sure you've talked about greeting people by name. So that was great right there. They said, when you didn't come in last night, we called. We found out about your flight. We figured you'd be coming in about now. The buffet breakfast was over 45 minutes ago, but we've told them to keep the stations open for you. You just go right up there and have a nice breakfast and don't worry about anything." I said, "Well, how about our cars? You know, my car's – actually, we rented a car. Mm-hmm. The car's waiting outside. Yep. Don't worry about the car. We'll take care of it." So when we got back from breakfast, which they kept hot for us, not only was the car parked in the garage, but all of our suitcases were taken out and our skis were taken out. They were put in the ski lockers. The suitcases were in our room. It was just unbelievable.
Isn't that fabulous?
And you know how many people I've told that story to?
Yeah. Of course. I mean, we all have those kind of stories. You know, I don't know if you've got time, but I mean, I think I had mentioned to you that story about the Delta airline.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is basically an example of what happens when something doesn't go right. I mean, when you've told that story to everybody because things have gone well and it's really terrific. If things hadn't gone well, or you know, if there was a reason that things didn't go well, people have a tendency to tell even more. I'm once sitting on an airplane next to somebody, and I'm going to Buffalo in the winter, which isn't something that I would recommend.
Sorry to hear that.
I wouldn't recommend that to anybody. And this fellow says to me, do you always fly U.S. Air?" And I said, "Yes, because it sort of goes to the places up and down the Northeast where I work." And he says, "Well, I do now because I don't fly Delta anymore." And I sort of said, "Well, why is that?" And he proceeded to tell me about the fact that he was in some consulting business and he put on about 200,000 miles a year, and he went on a business trip to Atlanta, was going to be down there for 3 or 4 days, and the night he gets there, he gets a frantic call from his wife who was having chest pains or something. She was going to the hospital, and she said, "You know, you got to get home the next morning." So he calls up Delta Airlines. They say, "Don't worry, you know, come in. It's a 7 o'clock flight. We'll get you right on it." So it was bad weather in Atlanta, I guess. A whole bunch of people in front of the airline counter. He tries to run up to the front of the line. "I got to get on the thing. Sir, you'll have to get to the back of the line." And this goes on a couple of times. To make a long story short, he never got on that flight back to Boston. He's furious, obviously, looking around for some customer service rep, couldn't find one. Wants to talk to a supervisor. There was nobody there. I guess he just couldn't get any kind of satisfaction from the fact that he had really been, here he is, such a terrific customer for Delta, and they didn't treat him right. So here's what happened. He has decided that he is not flying Delta Airlines anymore, and he has sent out a directive to his company, and I think there were something like 34 other people who also fly 200,000 miles a year, and they are told that under only the most extreme emergency are you to fly Delta Airlines. So they've lost his 200,000 miles, the 200,000 miles from 34 other employees, and he has made it a small career out of telling everybody that he sits next to on an airplane not to fly Delta.
You know, you never know who you're messing with. You know, you treat a patient poorly or treat a patient well. It just could be somebody that, you know, has a lot of friends or certain, you know, that is in a position to influence 10 or 20 or 50 people to come to your office or to never go to your office.
No question about it. That's why what Mort says, you know, whatever it takes, make the patient happy.
Yep. Well, hey, Mayor, it has been fantastic. I know that you've been doing a great job with the hundreds of offices that are using you as a consultant, and now you've reached thousands more. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
It's been awfully nice to be able to have the opportunity, Rich, and I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Now, if any listeners want to get in touch with you about any questions or to learn about your bonus system, or if they want to look into having you do some consulting for them, how would they find you?
Well, by phone, you can reach me at 401-421-3615. My fax number is 401-273-0896. I have a website, and the address is Burning Electrons, burningelectrons.com/Jodena, capital J, O-D-E-N-A. Jodena is my consulting company. So,
what is Burning Electrons?
You know, it's somebody who hosts it.
Okay, I got
you. If we had done this tape in about a month and a half, it would be Jodena, www.jodena.com, because I now have got a domain name, but we're in the process of putting that together. But burningelectrons.com/Jodena, as long as you put in the http://... in the little box there, you can pull up my website and people can also find out information about me in that manner.
Great. Can they email you as well?
You can email me at Jodena at home, HOME.com.
Oh, you've got the high-speed cable internet connection. Oh. Isn't that the greatest?
You can't live without it.
Now, once you have it, you cannot live without it.
You just can't go back without it.
Yep. Well, Mayor, again, thanks so much. The information on staffing was just fantastic. I know every listener can benefit from that, and some neat customer service stuff as well. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do this tape.
Rich, you're very welcome. You have a good rest of your day.
You got it.
Okay, bye-bye.
For information on more tapes in this series, the Richards Report newsletter, or the Richards Report Super Fall Seminar, please call 1-800-258-0060.